komm. Und es sprach doch so viel dagegen. Wir waren viel zu verlegen, du und ich, aber ich umso mehr, umso mehr.
Today in this second episode in English of my podcast Salon Holofernes, I shall be talking to one of my closest friends yet again. This time I am talking to Teitur, a wonderful songwriter from the Faroe Islands, which is a tiny group of islands that he will kindly put on the map for you during our little chat. But Teitur isn't only my most inspiring artist friend, he is also, I think, one of the best people to talk to about songwriting, because he's exceptionally articulate when it comes to explaining what he does and why. Yes, also we wrote a lot of songs together, and he's been my main collaborator over the last, I think, 4 years, 5 years since we've known each other. And because I've seen him up close, I can say that he is probably a bona fide genius, and I will try not to say that when I talk to him so as not to make him uncomfortable. But I think it's important that you know. So enjoy. It's so good to see you.
You too.
Are you in your studio or upstairs?
No, I'm in Copenhagen, actually.
Oh, you are?
I am in Copenhagen. Yeah, I'm doing these drive-in shows. There's a drive-in tour in Denmark now, and I'm on it.
That's so really cool.
It's really bizarre.
How many have you done?
I just done one. I mean, I did two on the Faroes that I sort of organized myself, and now I've got myself into this thing in Denmark, where it's five shows, and it's a Live Nation thing. They just put up a big stage, and then they have several shows, you know, coming in.
Is it fun, or is it like mostly weird?
It's all of those things. I think for everybody, also for the people who are there, it's weird and awkward. But also nice, because you want to go out and hear music, you know. So it's nice. But this gig was strange, because it was super windy, and it's one of those things. And I was on this big screen, so everyone can see you, and I couldn't hear a thing, because it was just this noise coming from all the wind in this big stage, and it was raining too. And the stage was like, you could literally play a football game on that stage, and it was just me, you know, standing there. and you know, you're being filmed too, and you have to like play really well. It was really, it was kind of strange, but I think inside the car they use the FM, you know, they use the signal, yeah, for the radio, so it sounds much different than you think when you're playing.
Do you hear anything? No applause, no nothing?
Nothing. They put a screen in front of me with like eight faces, with like people like eating chips and watching. But that was kind of nice, because then I could at least see some people. And I managed to have a conversation at one point with one car that they had microphones or something. So we were talking. But it was kind of fun. It was very 2020, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of for the history books, right? I mean,
yeah.
how long have you been isolated before? Like, you had those 2 weeks where you like really couldn't leave the house.
Yeah, right? That was straight. I was in Germany, you know. I was on the way to see you guys, and I had to flee the border, basically, because they were closing the borders. So I drove back with the rental car and got in the airport the next day. I was kind of lucky. Everything was really smooth. So, and then I was in quarantine for 2 weeks. And then I've just been on the Faroes ever since.
So this is the first time you, like, for how long have you been allowed to leave the country?
Just recently. Well, I think you could actually leave the country. I think you could have, but it was just like one plane a week or something like, and it was, you did not want to do that. You know, why would you leave? You know, it seemed like a bad idea to go anywhere. Like even going to Denmark would be like, oh.
Why?
Yeah, because everything is closed down, and it seemed like the best thing is just to stay at home, and that we did. And Angela and my wife has been, she's been working. So
okay, I've been home.
Also, but also going out to meetings and so on. They have meetings where they're keeping a distance and everything. It's really, really strange.
That's so weird. But like, how are you holding up, or how were you? Like, were you really, really disappointed to drop the tour? And
I think I was just like perfectly in denial of everything, like I can be in these kinds of things, you know? I was like, oh, this is fine. But actually, I'm, you know, there's like little pieces of me that are being picked out of my heart right this very moment. But I'm just in denial, I think. But no, in a way, I've also enjoyed the sort of pause thing, and enjoyed that we are lucky that it isn't so bad for us, that it's we're in good hands, and everything, that everybody that we know, like everything seems okay. Nobody has really, I mean, people lost money, that kind of thing, but no one is really hurting. It seems everyone's like getting by.
Yeah, same here. It's kind of, we haven't, I mean, it's scary and everything, and it's weird with the kids. And I mean, it hasn't been easy, but on the other side, I really enjoy like the forced simplicity of things, you know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, I turned the microphone the wrong way. So now you're going to get improved audio.
Yay.
It's been facing the other way. Oh, that's a much better signal.
Okay.
Good.
Well, we should be fine, I think. Mm-hmm. Should we? I mean, this is going to be like, I think, part telling people who don't really know about you, who you are and what you do.
Sure.
But like for the most part, it's going to be like a masterclass, and we can totally nerd off.
Okay.
You know, because it's, cool. I mean, I'm talking to artists of all different trades, and we're talking about how they work and how creativity works. And so it's really nerdy. And but maybe like just to set the scene. So could you tell people where you actually live when you're not in Copenhagen, and how that has been in during the lockdown and everything?
Yeah, well, I live in the Faroe Islands, which is... basically, if you imagine England and Scotland, the continuance of the isles that are up there, if you take the northern part of England, you have the Orkney Islands, and then the Shetlands, and then the Faroe Islands. So it's this, the last sort of group of islands in the Atlantic, right between Iceland and Norway. That's where we live, and that's where I grew up, as you know, and you've been there too.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, that's where we live, and it's one of the smallest countries in the world. Only 50,000 people live there, and we have our own sort of community going on with our own language and our own culture, and it's a really great place to be, actually, and it's interesting times there, but that's where we've been during the the lockdown, and everyone is. It seems to me that everyone is saying that, oh, it must be so nice to be in the Faroe Islands during the lockdown, but the truth is that it's as bad as most places, because everything is COVID and Corona, and you can't do anything. You're locked at home, and after a while, I think it gets the same for everybody in a way, frustration.
I think it must be easier to isolate because there is like barely any people. I mean, when I got there, I was like, where is everybody? and you said, this is everybody.
Like, yeah, but that's it. Like my wife is saying that I can't tell the difference because I'm always just at home anyway and not going out. Like I'm such an introvert that I don't really go out so much. So for me, it's been like staying at home with some changes on the internet, you know? Yeah.
I mean, for us, it's weird because outside is so different from inside. Like, I'm pretty good at isolating myself and kind of focusing on my introvert aspects. Yeah. But once you leave the house, it's just crazy. There's like a Volksfest going on, you know?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
just so many people in the streets and you have to zigzag and, you know, like
it's get so out strange,
of everybody's that. Way. It's really weird.
That's so strange. I think there's definitely that we're forgetting it, you know, that you're going somewhere and then, oh, right, there's Corona. Like that has happened to me many times, like especially now when I come to Copenhagen, you really forget it because it's mainly in the mind, you know?
Yeah, it is.
The thing.
It is, unless like you catch it. But can you, because I think maybe you can tell people your history of living on the Faroes and then not, and then going back, because I think that's really interesting for your like artistic voyage.
Yeah, I think that my sort of background or my drive to make music and to create was very much this coming from a small place, like the provincial kid, you know, who you grow up there and there's the frustration that why don't we have music venues? Why can't I go out to hear other bands? Why can't I make this music? There was always cover music. Like when I grew up, there was always just cover bands and zero self-confidence in you can make your own music. And my sort of generation or our group of friends, we were all, let's go make it ourselves and sort of change that. And going out was always just people just wasted, drunk, you know, there was no sort of fine taste really, like with it didn't matter what kind of beer you drank, or you just got a bottle of vodka and you got wasted. It wasn't like, how does the vodka taste? You know, there was never any sort of fine tuning, I think, with it was all very sort of rough, I think. And then in the 90s, when I was in my teens, it was very rough time for the Faroes. It sort of collapsed, the economy collapsed, and a lot of people lost their jobs and moved away from the Faroe Islands. And my family got affected too. So we moved to Denmark and I was 17 at that time. And for me, it just seemed like an upgrade. You know, I could go to a town in Denmark and go to a music school and that kind of thing. And I was in a band at that time, and we were really popular band on the Faroe Islands that we were playing in these sports halls. But we were sort of insisting on playing our own music, our own songs. But people were really wasted, you know. And we played usually we play like three sets. You know, we do one set at 11 to 12, and then we wait a bit, and then another one, and then people start coming around 3. You know, that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
It was really bizarre, and I think that part of sort of upbringing and me learning to play music in my room and learning Beatles songs and chords and all these recording, blah, blah, I was that kid who I got really disappointed because there was this buildup inside of me, like there must be more, like this can't be it, you know, this is not what I'm hearing on the records, you know. And so I was ready to go away, and I felt bitter, and I was kind of still am in a sad way. I still thinking that the music in the Faroe Islands is the same way, but it's not. Like now there's venues and people love music, and
I mean when we came like for your wedding,
yeah,
to me it felt like all the cliches that you know about Wales. Everybody sings, like everybody can sing. Everybody's your parents, your friends, everybody's always singing. And then it felt like everybody like our age is kind of in a grindcore metal band, but also has this like lovely, beautiful, you know, like ambient, nice music going. Yeah. I thought it was really special.
The thing is that I would say people are extremely musical because you must imagine that since there was no entertainment, we had a television when I was small, and that was like really revolution, you know, like and there was one channel that was at Mondays and Friday, yes, I think there was, you know, and so if you just go back 100 years or so, all of the entertainment and music is self-made. So people sang a lot. you know, for their kids, when and when you get together, there's this really big tradition of singing. There's probably more choirs per capita in the Faroes than I would say most places. So people really love to sing and they're great at it. Like it really is. It's different if you hear if you go to a party or a wedding and you hear people sing. It's really everyone sings in key and unison and is used to singing. You can tell, and that's not the normal thing. If you go to to a football stadium anywhere, but it's actually really beautiful, very musical people. So I think I grew up also with playing. You know, when people sing in parties and so on, I was always that guy who was accompanying. You know, who's playing played a guitar or piano, and I would. That's how I came into music. Really, is to learn how to play the songs that people sing, and that's why I became interested in songwriting. It's how you accompany. How do the chords move? What happens when you do that? And what happens if you start playing it in this key instead of that key? And all those things, I started to learn that language and became really good at that. But that was sort of my natural go-to place, was to just accompany people when they sang. I just loved doing that. And my dad had this organ. My dad is also musical, and my mom also was a great singer. So we always had music in the house. But I became obsessed with the songwriting. And then when I joined this this band before I moved to Denmark.
What were they called?
It was called Mark No Limits.
Woo!
the keyboard player, his name is Mark. So it was kind of his band. And we were it was actually a workplace band. Two guys, they worked in this shop together where you sell pencils and paper and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they had a storage, and that's where they set up some gear and they used to play. And then my stepfather, he was working there too. And he's like, "Hey, Tidrish, you should go and play with these guys. They play music." But they were way older than me. So the only way I could sort of impress them was like, "Hey, I made the song today." And they could play much better than me, but I immediately took the role of the songwriter and just always was writing songs. So that's why we also had like 40 songs, and we could play these halls, you know, these sports halls in the weekends with our own material, because we just wrote a lot of music. But that sort of also,
Did you sing right away?
I did, but that sort of came later, because I never thought I was really singing. And there was this other singer that we got this girl singer who would sing the songs, but it gradually just became me and her singing. But I was sort of the lead singer at the end, but it was also just for practical reasons, because it's like, hey, we got the song, it goes like this, and we don't have time. So it was also just sort of that thing. I'll just sing it. I never really imagined that I would do that. But then when I moved to Denmark, that was sort of the breakup. You know, I would go so often to the weekends to the Faroes to play for a bit.
Which takes how long by ferry, just like so people can imagine?
It's 36 hours on the ferry if you take the boat. But if you take the plane, it's like 2 hours. But you have to go to Copenhagen first, and it's a bit of a trek, you know?
Yeah.
But I would do that often. I would go home and play. This is me when I'm 17, you know. So just doing those kinds of shows, going back and da-da. And then I became sort of resentful and bitter at the music business situation in the Faroe Islands. So this was my rebellion, and that's why I'm still, I think, making music. It's because out of spite. Yeah, I'm gonna show those motherfuckers.
We don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
Speak your mind. But I mean, how did you because in the end, or not in the end, but in between, you ended up basically traveling around the world or living in different locations, doing a lot of songwriting with other people, right? How did that come about?
Well, that sort of happened during my school years in Denmark. This is like a suburban town in Denmark that's kind of big, that has the biggest music school in Denmark. So that's where I was, and I was in gymnasium. And at the same time, I was doing I guess what is preparation, prep school for conservatory. So yeah. it's something that the music schools in Denmark, they offer. You can go, if you have ambitions to go into a conservatory, you can go and do these training to basically to, you train to get accepted into conservatory, basically, when you go yeah. and do the test. You know, you learn to read and da-da-da, all the necessary things. So I did that too while I was in school. And then when I was finished in gymnasium, I guess college is called, or gymnasium.
Yeah.
At that time, I sort of made a plan. It's like, okay, I really want to make music. And I mean, I would always make music. I come home from school and I make music. You know, it was pretty a simple.
Yeah, I've met you.
Equation. Yeah, right. It was just like, yeah, that's all I wanted to do. And so the end of it is became clear. Like, okay, I should be doing this, and I want to be doing this forever. So what should I do? Like, how should I spend my time? So I basically gave myself 5 years. You know, I said I can do this for 5 years and make music, but that it's important that I actually make music. Like, I shouldn't be learn how to make cappuccinos or to make deliveries, but I actually want to spend my time making music. And that's what I did. So I got a job where I worked. It's only 2 days per week. So I got paid like 300-400 euros per month. You know, that's all I had.
Yeah.
And then I was just really nerding it out and just writing songs in my apartment. And I started to go to these songwriter things nights, you know, where all the songwriters go and play each other's songs and cry together, you know, like that kind yes. of thing. So I did that. And then there I met some other songwriters, and then I got invited to play in a festival in Denmark, which was like a showcase thing. Like it's called Spot Festival. It's mm-hmm. It's for new talents, where managers, booking agents, da-da, they go to check out new things. And I got invited to one of those songwriter things there. And that's where really everything started for me, where I met still my manager today. We've worked together for more than 20 years now.
Your manager, Christian, who is a dog dad to 6 huskies, right?
Now there's actually only 2 left. There was 9. But they all sort of just been going... Yeah, gradually now.
Oh no!
Now he's now he has 2 dogs, but famously he had 9 huskies. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and he lives in the UK.
Yeah.
And, so when I met him, it became next level for me, because he was at the time working in BMI in London, and he was running the BMI offices there.
So in he publishing invited me. Or in
yeah, it, BMI is sort of the, is it called STEMA in Germany? No.
GEMA?
GEMA, yeah.
Yeah.
GEMA. STEM, GEMA, NCBA, CODA in Denmark.
Okay.
It's also called ASCAP in the US. There's BMI and ASCAP. But he was working for them, so he was into the whole songwriting, publishing thing, right? And he was started inviting me to go to London to write with him, and also this other guy, Jeff Cohen, whom I'm still writing with. I've written many of my songs together with Jeff. I also met him in the same week in Denmark, and I sort of, you know, I chose them, or they became my team, or as it were. And there was other also the same weekend was a friend of mine, Nick Woodbridge, who I wrote with, and a guy called Jamie Hartman, who's still. He's written, actually he's got loads of like number ones right now. He wrote that song for what's that called? Human, I'm Only Human.
Oh yeah.
He wrote that one and just lots of other songs. And we were all there the same weekend. It was really sort of a magical thing, and we all got really inspired from being on that trip.
And you were really, like 18, 19 at the time?
I think at the time probably more like 20 I think, or 19, 20 or so, yeah. And then I started to it was in 1999, so I was 22.
Okay.
22, yeah. And then I started going to London and to New York to write with them. And it's also like very classic title. Like I got my tickets got paid from a ship broker. He heard me. Yeah, I was at home in the Faroe Islands one, you know, Easter holiday, Christmas something, and I was on the radio because I was well known for my band there, da da. So I was on the radio and talking to this guy, and then I got a telephone call from the ship broker. It's like, hey man, I heard you on the radio. I think you're great. When you go and make these trips to write music, I want you to call me first, and then I will pay your tickets.
That's awesome.
And he did that. So I went to New York and London.
You had a patron.
I had a patron.
Yeah.
And I made my 300, 400 euros for my pasta, you know. So that was all I needed. And then I stayed at home with Jeff, you know, when I was in New York. And I stayed at home with Christian, my manager, and my friend Nick. It was just when that sort of EasyJet, all that stuff was happening. So it was kind of okay to fly to London. It seemed all right. And then I did that for a couple of years, just riding with sort of my managers and Jeff's folks. And then I got offered a publishing deal like a couple of years after that. And then I got signed in the States by in this publisher called Windswept. And that sort of was a big game changer for me, you know. Then my career really started, I feel like. But up until then, it was very much just, it was songwriting, you know. It's always, and it still was, even after I got signed with the publisher, it was still going out to write more for everybody.
And, were you ever scared being so young and being like put in a room to write a song? Did you ever cramp up or,
blocked
or no?
Oh God, no. I was just totally brash and just like, oh yeah, I know how to do everything. You know, I was just that guy, you know, I just thought it was super fun. But I think what's sort of lucky is that I definitely became very hipster and very sort of opinionated. And you know me, I am very opinionated and so on. But in that situation, I was really like in it for, I knew I was learning stuff. Like I was totally okay with writing a crappy song and calling it a great day. Like it was fine. And I knew that most of the songs we would write in this awkward situation would probably be crap, or some of them might be good, you know. But I was okay with just like, I'm learning stuff. How does this person do it? And that's kind of how I looked at it. And in the end of it, I realized, whoa, actually we made some great things. But I was very sort of open, I think, to just learn. And I got the sort of idea from my friend who was a photographer, who said that when he had a camera, a film roll, there was 36 pictures in it. And if he got one picture that was great, he was happy. As a photographer, that was fine. Like taking 36 pictures and having one great one was fine. And that was kind of my same approach to songwriting. It's like, yeah, I'll just write hundreds of songs and then I'll have a couple of good ones. You know, that was kind of my philosophy. It felt super unprecious to me, actually. It was just like, yeah, it's just songs. And then gradually it became more of an oriented thing of, wait, what do I want to write? And what is songs? And why do I want to sing this? Do I want to go out and sing about that? Or like, where am I? You know, that started later. But in the beginning, I was yes to everything. And I was writing, with so many people. But I definitely was not into making records. Like, I was like, I'm not making records and I hate playing in bands. You know, it was all, it was just me getting my stuff together as a songwriter. And I was, you know, you're so arrogant when you're young. I was convinced that I was, you know, I would be the best songwriter in the universe.
You pictured yourself on stages, right? Singing them. Or did you like feel like you would be somebody who would always write for other people?
I think both, you know, I think both. I had it a little bit as a side project, I think. But I think I realized early on that in order to make music and to get ahead and to always have a firm base, I need to learn how to become a great songwriter. Like, I knew I can play stuff, I can sing, I love music, I can make music. That part's easy. And being on a stage, it's like I can do that, all those things, okay. But what I really need to master is the songwriting thing, because that is what is inside of everything. That's what you take with, and that's what you can actually generate money also. That's the real sort of heritage is that part. And I realized that really early on.
That's fantastic, because, you know, there's so many, like, I think there's so many people who start out who care about the songs the least.
Yeah, you know, big time, big time.
And that kind of catches up with you.
Big time.
And I'm also wondering, like, because, I mean, I think I've never met anybody who's as, you know, like, loose and easy with music and songwriting as you are. You know, like, it seems so natural with you. And I'm wondering whether, like, you had that from the get-go or whether that was probably your training. Mm. Those sessions, you know, did that, like,
I think, I think I just enjoy it. You know, I think it's really fun. And it's probably because I've just done it so many times. And I guess so. But I think I'm just really into it. You know, like I get super excited by it. And it's a really freaky thing, I think, to I sometimes think that it's so silly. You can walk on the street and you have a problem about how to solve a chord progression. Like it's a really crazy thing to actually go around and do, but it's actually what I really, really love. Like to me, it makes sense to make music in a way. I think it just helps me to be who I am or something. It's so I enjoy it. I don't find it frustrating to make music. It's super fun. I mean, it's frustrating sometimes, you know, getting your computer or your Mac to work out, or if you're writing a complicated score or something. There's definitely things that are frustrating, but at its very core, I just think it's I become a dog, you know. You throw a bone and it's instinctively enjoyable, I think.
I think that's really interesting because I mean, this is going to make you blush, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think you are one of the very few people I've met that I would call a genius to their face.
Oh, come on. No.
you'll just have to live with that. And I'm just going to keep talking. But the thing is, like, I'm wondering because, I mean, this is a podcast for creative people. And one thing that I think is really interesting about you is that I know a lot of people who are gifted and who have always been in music and stuff comes easy to them and they're like natural, like great natural singers and they can like you do, they read music and they can like arrange string quartets in their head. But a lot of those people seem to have problems finding their own thing because they can do anything. Yeah. I think for a lot of people who are like that, it's even more difficult because they don't have the limitations, right?
Yeah.
So you don't really find what is yours. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that you've never had that. Like, how do you think it happened that you still, among all the things that you can be doing or could be doing, you always know, you kind of always know what to do?
I think it's also a choice. It's something I've chosen, like, to do. I think it's maybe a mixture of a couple of things, but there was definitely a conscious choice. Like in the time after being finished with school, it's like, okay, I really, really want, I just really want it. You know, I want to make music. I tried working, going to work and coming back and getting paid. And it was always like, really? Like, and I realized if I could just go out and play two shows, I can pay for my pasta, you know, like it was always that. So I think I've sort of made a plan, you know, like a master plan or some sort of like an end game. And that is become a songwriter, be a good songwriter. And start in the right place, like make records where you can evolve. And I waited for a really, really long time to make record, to become an artist. And like, I said no, just as much as I said yes to the creative thing. I was always very sort of conscious that, okay, I need to do this right if I want to have a career. And I did see a lot of people going for the quick moves and getting their dad record deal and writing the song so it could become a hit so they can get better numbers. And I was always sort of wary of just like, okay, just I still kind of have that foolish belief that I'll peak that when I am 60, you know, like I'm still getting my way around, like but I think I'm just I'm happy with doing that.
But do you ever did you ever have to, like, within the songwriting or within the music thing, did you have to make choices? Because I remember, like, when we talked, I think 2 years ago, you were a little bit torn, like, whether you wanted to stay in that songwritery lane or like pursue that more like new classical thing.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that you can do even within the music. Like, how did you find your voice? You know, because you have a very strong, like, artistic signature. And I think that's harder to develop for people who can, like, sing anything they want to. Like, how did you decide that you were not going to be, I don't know, that guy?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I do struggle with those sorts of things, that what do you want to do, what is fun, and the writing with others, me and the orchestral things. And but I think it always circles around the songs, you know. For me, it's always, the idea is, the acceptance is that, okay, if I'm going to make music, I better be in the center. Like, I've chosen that. Okay, I'm in the center of it because no one else is going to do it, and I'm sort of forcing myself to be the artist, to be the performer. And in some ways, I think I am, but I also think, like, I also am an artist. Like, I create things and I see things and I want to do them. So I have this drive to make things, and I think the songwriting is so strong because within that storytelling thing, you have all this room where you can actually make all those roles. You know, you can, I find it sort of endless how you can accompany a song, how you can tell a story. And to me, that's always is interesting and enough place to play in, so where I can use all of these things that I would like to do. I sort of feel that I can incorporate everything since it's songwriting. And I don't think I could do that if trombone was my main thing or singing, you know. I think the songwriting is sort of a very good gathering point where I can be many things. I can be an artist, I can be a singer, I can be a producer, arranger, I can sort of make all those sides come together. And I think my identity as a songwriter or artist is just that. It's because I've sort of chosen to keep it centered around that thing. And I waited for a really long time to make sort of the start. And I write a lot of things that I don't put out. Like, I always try to, but I have this vision of what I want to hear and how I want my music to be. So it's always sort of, it comes into that pile and the rest just goes away.
I think that's really interesting because, like, one thing I would tell every aspiring songwriter that comes to me is allow yourself to write as many shitty songs as you can.
Yeah.
Because people are so protective of their, like, early work that they kind of cramp up and don't really get anything done. And I think that's really important to, on the one hand, I don't know, just keep writing songs. But on the other hand, you have the, I don't know, like, an issue of urgency, which I think helps decide what to pursue, which is also really interesting. You know, like, how do you know when something is really strong? Like, how do you know it in your body?
Yeah. I think it takes a lot of soul searching, I think. And to me, to sort of learn how to navigate between those things is super important when you're creative. It's because that exact thing you described with you, when you start out, maybe you make some songs and then you become really precious about them. But often what is actually happening is that, I think I've learned this from trying to, you know, finishing so many songs per day when I was traveling, and it was so you had to just finish the song and get it done. But that sort of preciousness is often just you getting to know stuff. It's often because you maybe are insecure, you don't feel you're talented enough. So when you finally found something great, you're like, oh my God, I did this. Oh, thank God I pressed record on my iPhone. Now I just have to listen to the thing 20 times and then I can learn how to do what I just did. And then it's a song. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you start practicing whatever just came out of you that time. And you think of that as a song. It's really hard to step away from that and say, oh, what is this made of? What does this do? Why do I want to sing that? Can I say that better? Well, how does it start? How does it end? It's really, that's what songwriting is all about, I think, is to be able to navigate between those things and to see, okay, when am I playing? When am I the musician? When am I the explorer? And when am I the creator? When do I invent tennis and when do I play tennis? You know? And it's really all about that. I think that's the at the very core is to navigate, like when I'm creating something, what is it really just my own insecurities? You know, am I going to a big getting to know myself evening, or am I writing material music to play? You know what I mean? It's just that. It's just Gefühl. You know, it's just you're just feeling it, and you feel lucky to be creative, but I think when you make songs, you have to bring something more to the table. It's not just all Gefühl. It's also a craft.
I think that's interesting, right? Because you get to a point where it's about how closely you are identified with the song, which I think is really important for people who start out to know. It's like, on the one hand, you have to be so deeply personal about your songwriting and you like bare your soul and it's really deep.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you have to be like kind of, you have to be able to step back a little bit and see it for what it is and what it could be to other people. Or I don't know. There has to be like a little bit of...
Yeah, you want to communicate, you know? Or else it's just you in an identity crisis, you know? Like I think it's really all about that, you know. Is it, what is behind it? Is it you saying, everyone look at me, I'm doing a beautiful thing, or is it everybody look at me, I'm really sad, or is it, you know what I mean? It's, or like, what is the drive of you making that song? I think that's a perfectly cool question to ask. Like, what do you want with this? Like, what's the purpose here? And then make it better, you know, improve it. I think that it's, I think I've had a lot of like soul searching, realizing that, oh, this is just a selfish thing. Like I'm just being selfish, or now I'm just whining, or now I'm just learning something on guitar that I don't know, or now I'm just
doing therapy.
Now I'm trying to figure out how stuff is recorded, you know, like trying to know when you're writing the song and when you're getting to know things is crucial, I think. And to sort of see it with bird's eye view and okay, now it's a song that we gotta move, not my tendency to like this sound or whatever, you know? Like, that's not the song. And I also think that a lot of writers you get what happens in this room, you know, say you're with somebody that you maybe you like them, but you don't wanna wear the same clothes, you don't wanna listen to the same music as they do. You're not the same. You wouldn't be doing it. You're not best friends, but you're writing a song together. And then it's like 80% of the whole drama, emotional drama in that room is basically genres. It's like, ooh, I don't like that. Like, you know, you go into arrangement mode immediately. That's how you say it. And that's also, to me, like, the great songwriters, they know how to steer away from that and say, wait, that can be done a million times, million ways, you know. It's trying to decipher when is it a performance and when is it a song, and I think that's also something that I have been just in those situations so much that I could see it much better, to not get involved in the, ooh, what is this person? And I don't really like your shoes, you know, or like that stuff should not get in the way of the song, because the song can be so many things, and it's just a matter of like, don't make the presentation fool you. And I really often also felt when I've written a great song, But the way we recorded it was not in some way. And therefore, that person is like, oh, I didn't never like that song, because they can only sort of hear the arrangement or the vibe of the recording. You know what I mean? That's also something that's really hard to navigate in, I think, is to differentiate the sort of performance aspect or the recording of something and trying to find in what's the actual bones of this material that we are trying to make in this room.
I just had a thought that, like, for people listening who have no idea how those sessions work, maybe we should describe what kind of a, like, that's a job. There's people who do nothing but that. Like, they meet up in, like, those songwriting camps, or they get thrown together. They've never met each other, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you can describe those scenes, like Nashville, or, you know, how that works.
Yeah, that's what the sort of thing I did when I was started with my publisher and just throwing me through these things. And it's basically you meet with someone and you have a day to write a song. In Nashville, it's often two songs per day. You start, have one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And you just get together and you finish ideas that you have brought often. Sometimes you start fresh and you finish a song together. And sometimes it's just about getting a better catalog yourself. You're improving your songs. Sometimes you're writing for yourself. Sometimes you're writing for someone else. Sometimes you're just writing for fun. Mostly, I think you're just writing to see if something nice happens, you know, if it's a cool song. And then there's different styles. You know, in Nashville, there's one way to do it. You want to get the songs recorded by country artists. And in New York, it's different. But I've always sort of been an artist too, you know, so it's always been, we're really writing this for me, or if I'm writing with someone else, like, are we writing this for you? There's always that sort of, who's this for? But I'm always thinking, hey, this is about writing a great song. You know, I really, if it's a great song, I'll be happy to sing it. And if I like it, you know.
Or like we did, we just make like a German and an English version.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's it really varies on the thing. Or if you're writing with an artist, then you write for their project, and then you, I mean, I'm always completely, musical genres. That's like, it's so uninteresting to me. It's like I'm into food. You know, I like food, and people who only deal with carrots are just missing out. You know, like it's, I don't understand why you only. Like what I'm trying to say is that I feel like I can write many different styles of music. Like it's just music. It's not a style. And if I'm writing only one style of music, then I get bored. Then it's like, hey, what we're doing now is actually just imitating something that you have heard, listened to too much, you know, like, and I think that's not musical. Like I sort of get, but that definitely is also a situation where you're in a room and then people are trying to emulate a style or something that's cool and hip, and then you do that and you snort cocaine and belt out hook lines, you know. But I was never into that whole thing. But that's definitely also a part of the scene. Is you get together and you want to create a big hit song, and then all of the melodies they're like that because it's gotta be really strong.
I've done very few. I think you were the first person that I really wrote with a lot, like we did. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've done that a couple times, and I mean, it's really, it's really different. The speed of it, you know,
it's super fast. Yeah,
yeah, it's like people just keep belting out something, and it's like, okay, that's the chorus. We're all set. Go.
I mean, I think Grandpa's too old now. Like, I don't. Like I like doing it if it's with people I know that I like, but I get really bored if I can sense that it's about imitating something else and it's about insecurity and getting successful, and so then I'm bored.
You're out. Yeah.
I would rather write an obscure thing for you know, the
I feel you, but I think I still think it's like really astounding how much you have managed to preserve and hone your own thing. And I think that maybe the secret to why you have kept like such a distinct sound for yourself is that it's based on very like timeless songwriting principles. Do you know what I mean? It's like all your songs, if you strip them down, are like that. They're like very they're not depending on the arrangement. They're not depending on the musical side. They're like very classical.
It's the stuff that I learned from when I was a kid. You know, the pharaohs. You know, the accompanying. It's the campfire song tradition. Yeah. But that's kind of where I'm from. You know, that it's that songs that people sing, and why do people sing them? It's that has always been at the core of my school. You know, and that's still how it is. And then struggling. How do I want them to sound when I sing them, and how do I accompany that story with sound? You know, like that's still sort of where I'm at. But you're right, at the very core, it's very old, like oil painting art. It's very very old, boring and old, uncool. But
that's not what I said.
I feel like I'm sacrificing some things by sticking to some very old things or whatever, but I think in the long run it works. Like and I when I make my albums, I always try to make it timeless. Like I get sort of turned on by that it shouldn't be what's the correct thing or whatever. But I really want to put it on in 15 years and go like, whoa, that sounds cool.
But that's an interesting thing. I mean, I'm just assuming that we'll have like young songwriters listening. And I think that's really important because I think even also with language, not only with the music, it's kind of important that if you want to use words that are very much of their time, you should at least know. It's always one thing that kind of puts me off if you have too many. Like, we can't really talk about that because all the words I can think of are in German. But like, if you want to use words that are like, you know, a slang thing that might be gone next year, I would never do that, you know, because you kind of, you know, that you've just destroyed something that could have been timeless. You know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but I think I also imagine myself at my own shows. Like I would hate myself so much if I made a song about a sandwich, you know? Like if I had to sing about a sandwich every night, I would kill myself, you know? Like I better sing something that I want to go up and sing every night.
Yeah.
And also like there's this fear, like what if I have this huge ass hit about something that I don't like, you know? Like what happens with that, you know?
It would be your, you know, short people, you know, that Randy Newman is really unhappy with short people because it's,
there we are.
Was gone for a second. You know, that Randy Newman always says that he's really, really unhappy that he wrote Short People because it was meant to be like a little novelty thing. And now it's like what everybody keeps screaming for.
Yeah.
I totally see that.
that totally happens.
No,
I just remember that there's also that funny, is it Randy Newman or Lyle Lovett or somebody they were talking about? I think it was Lyle Lovett talking about Randy Newman, or Randy Newman talking about Lyle Lovett, about how they like the music. And he says, yes, I like both of his songs. And I think that's also something really true. I mean, like, now I've written hundreds of songs, but it's actually still, it's just, you know, my thing anyway. It's still one or two songs, you know, that is the whole work. And
yeah, I mean, you keep, that. Everybody, I think, or a lot of people keep getting back to things that they are, sometimes I think as a songwriter, you're also like a scientist or somebody who like goes into an abyss with a lamp on their forehead, you know?
Sure.
Like one expedition, you find one thing, but then you need to go back and you find something else. And but it's kind of still the same, you know, the same thing you're doing, the same thing you're trying to find.
Yeah, sure.
I've written a lot of songs that I think are siblings, at least.
Sure. Yeah. I used to also acknowledge that when I was much younger that it's okay to write the same song in different ways, you know, about the same subject. I sort of encourage to do that. Like, it's fine if I have something I really want to say. It's cool to write 7 different versions of it, and then you sort of find what's the best way to say it, and why do I want to say that, and then you can. But often, I think by accident, you maybe have that same song becomes 2 different musical ideas that you like, and then you sort of perform it, or you try to put it on one this record and then one. That also happens sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
But they often come in batches. I feel like they are related in times, and then yeah. Sometimes you take old ones, new ones in. I think I'm just gonna take some coffee. That's allowed, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's one of those Nescafe, Nespresso things. And these, I think they're really bad for the environment. These pods, you know.
Oh yeah,
and you just like, I know. But I'm staying with this. You met him at our wedding, I think. This wine guy.
Oh yeah, sure. He was at my table.
Yeah, he. I'm staying in his Copenhagen, this crazy swanky place, like wow. A penthouse apartment here. It's really amazing.
Say hi.
Yeah, he's super lucky. I was just talking to him when I was looking for places. He's like, hey, come and stay here.
How long are you staying for?
10 days.
Cool.
2 shows in 10 days.
Wow.
I have to.
Okay. Yeah, you cannot really go back and forth unless you have to, right?
No, and also the planes are not so frequent. So.
Yeah. I want to dive a little bit into songwriting a little bit
yeah,
more.
Yeah, sure.
And,
go.
Also, like... the right mindset and also kind of life setting that you need to be mm-hmm. creative, and things that you've learned and can
sure.
share. But the first thing that I absolutely want to talk about, because it's you, is I've had the same discussion with a lot of people about whether humor belongs in music. And I think it kind of divides people. You know, like mm-hmm. a lot of people think,
sure.
no, music's not supposed to be funny. And I think you absolutely nail it. And you're always, or not always, but a lot of the time you're like on that very mm-hmm. narrow, you know, straight and narrow
sure.
little edge of where something is still moving and has a
sure.
lot of heart, but it's also
yeah.
really funny. So I want you basically to give people permission to be funny. And
yes,
how?
Well, and how? Well, I think I don't know how that actually really works. I think it's also comes in, if you're presenting something that is often serious or sad, you accompany it with humor to make it easier to digest. I think it's something to do with that, I think. And it's the realization that you can't, for 2 hours, be so serious or be so sad or angry, or you know, it's something to do with that I maybe just have a personal difficulty with. Like I can't like go John Malkovich and just be in character for like a day. Like I'm putting myself out there, and then I think it's a way to sort of. Also say, it's not a big deal, you know, haha. And it's the way I'm trying to excuse myself while presenting things. I think that's maybe what is at the very core of it. I'm not sure. But I also just want to make things that make me laugh, you know, that I want stuff to be funny. Like I can get giggles if I hear a sound that I think it's funny, or a combination of instruments that is funny when they're playing. Like, that stuff makes you laugh, and I think it's a very honorable thing. Like, I think making things pretty is honorable, and making things funny is honorable. And I think that it's part of it, you know. But some music, sure, can be serious, but. I think I am like so extremely serious about some things that I sort of need to have balance it off or to run away from it or to get a reality check or something. I think that's why humor is important to my music, but I think it's different from people to people. Like I remember I had a really 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 hard time to differentiate. You know, when I was touring a lot in the States when I was much younger, when I did my first record, I was playing every day for years, you know, I would go up to, I played up to 250 shows per year. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I was on the road with all these people. And then there was this one guy I was playing with. Well, I was always really annoyed because he's like, he's a stand-up comedian. He's not a musician. Like, his songs are crap. Like, can I write your songs? But everybody loved it. Like, the show was great. And he was actually telling jokes in between songs. And it was like horrible amazing penis jokes and amazing scenarios. Like, it was really just a mixture of, but he had a guitar and he sang them. So there was a period where I was sort of, that's not cool, you know, like I don't want to do that, and I don't want to talk in between. I had this face also where I didn't really want to talk in between songs, and I was also very shy. I'd sing with my eyes closed a lot, and so I didn't want to be funny, and if people laughed, but I think also people started laughing at my shows because I'm awkward, you know, like I'll say something really stupid by accident, and then people just laugh. Like, did he just say that? And then it was sort of a love and hate thing for my thing. But I think now that I'm older, I just sort of it's part of the thing is that it can be funny. It's okay. It's honorable to make people laugh. It's okay.
And also, it gives a good backdrop for the heartbreak. I think, you know, I think it's.
Sure.
I love artists who can handle both because it makes the sure heartbreak really like break your heart because yeah, 1 minute you're laughing and then it takes a turn and you're like, bleh. I love that. I mean, yeah, music can be yeah, like it can be like a Trojan horse, you know, you get people sure all relaxed and laughy and then you like twist the yeah knife. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're giving
people permission. But I've always had this I mean, maybe it's another subject, but I've also felt that there's this you know, you must honor the music, you know, that you shouldn't use music to promote your other thing that you want to do. Like, I always felt like, hey, wait a minute, or Madonna's not actually a musician, or
you were like a purist, you know, like
I always was struggling with that sort of thing. It's like when yeah, with humor and being on stage and I still sort of have difficulty navigating with that because I always ask the question, like, why is this person doing this? Like, why are you standing there right now? Like, why are you singing me this song? Like, that to me is always that question. Or even if you go to places or like what are they really trying to do in this establishment? What's the desire and will behind stuff? And I think that as soon as you're clear about that, then it's okay if someone is either funny or angry or you're like, it's all about wanting to understand, I think, the person who's there.
Yeah, I think that's really important because a lot of people, or it takes a lot of people some time to figure out that it's okay to have, I don't know, objectives, straight objectives as an artist, because a lot of people think mm-hmm everything just needs to be like loosey-goosey free and you just follow your mm-hmm you know, you like just follow the muse. But
sure,
I think sometimes that's maybe what separates people who actually make a career out of their music or who just stick with it, is that you also have like the ability to step back and be like, what is it I want to do, or what is it that I want to be?
And sure,
just be clear about motive, you know?
Sure.
And I think that it applies to your career, but it also applies to a single mm song. Like,
sure,
that's something that you can ask people who are writing a song and it's not really working. You're like, but yeah, but what is it that you want it to be? Are you clear about what you want this song to do?
I think that lies at the very core of being a composer. It's the desire and want to get people successfully going from A to B as successfully as possible. And it's like giving directions, you know, if someone asks you where is the store, you can do that. A good composer can do that can give you one line that you will remember and that will take you to that place. Or if you're a bad composer, you confuse that person and they'll go the wrong way and they'll fall and it'll be terrible. But I think that that's at the very core is when you are a composer, you have a desire to just be clear and communicate things clearly so that everyone goes there successfully when they reach bar 180. How do you make it sound the best with all of these people doing it together? And for that, you need clarity. You need Absolutely. To have a sense. You need to have a purpose. You need to have a destination. Like, it's better if you can tell the musicians, like, this is what this is about, and this is what needs to happen in this music, or if there is a sense of direction, because all that other stuff, the playing, the being, the artist, all that stuff is in there too. Like, you'll do that naturally when you walk to the grocery store. Like, if you're an artist, you are that. You are that. But you need to know if you're walking to the grocery store or not. I think if you're just doing it, then it becomes an empty thing. Yeah. I think when we make art, it's both of those things. I think it has a substance too. You need to have a sense of direction and a meaning, a place to go to when you make art.
And then you also need to be able to just listen and follow. It's a very, you know, it's yeah. kind of like a very delicate dance between, yeah. I think, the conscious mind and the unconscious.
Yep, it's definitely. It's all of those things together.
And I just have to ask, because you said that and it might be useful for a lot of people. You are / you were very shy, right? As a kid.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
And yeah. Like a long time into your adulthood, and you're still an introvert, I would say, like mm-hmm. kind of the definition probably of an introvert. In a way.
Mm-hmm.
And because I get asked that a lot, like now on my Patreon, people ask me mm-hmm. about those kinds of things, like, how do I deal uh-huh. with showing so much of me? How do I deal with yeah. an audience mm-hmm. and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So maybe because I know, like, I've never met anybody who is so in tune with their own, you know, factory settings. I think you mm-hmm. are very clear about mm-hmm. how you are configured and how you need to deal with it, how you need to, I think you've really worked on that, right? On being
for sure.
outgoing or on being
big time
connecting and that kind of, how did you do it and what did you need to do?
Well, I think it's necessary, you know, to be sort of outwards, but I think it's because when I'm speaking musical language, when I make music, I don't feel shy at all.
No.
Like then I feel great. And I think the closing my eyes stuff is very much also because I'm listening so hard to what it sounds like and to feeling it that way. And then I sort of hate being in a room with a lot of people, but it's absolutely necessary for me to do that. And the only way I can do that is if I'm in charge or something, like if I make the music and everybody's listening, then it's actually a fine situation for me because then I'm in control and it's okay. But if I'm in a birthday party, it's just noisy and it's something, it's some sort of a spectrum thing probably. I don't know. But I've been lucky because when I was in those 20s, when I was touring a lot, it was just that I had a very simple purpose. You know, it was like getting in a car, going to a place, playing a show and making records. Like, it was always very simple. And I think it's changed a lot now that I have a family and so on, where I realized how actually on my own I am, because I've always just been allowed to just be an artist, to just do what I do and make all my calls. And I think, that the sort of the shyness part is, I don't know. I think, I don't really go out to mingle or what. I don't do that thing at all. Like, I don't go, if I get invited to award shows and say, I never go because it's just, I don't really like it. And then I just have my group of friends that I, like, for instance, with you, we got a relationship. So I'm like, okay, I want to do everything in the world for you. That, you know, like, and that's kind of how I always been. You know, like, I'm cool with some people, and then some people I'm not cool with, and then I just stay away from all the things that I don't want to do. But I think when you're an artist, I think that that's why you are an artist. It's so that you can control that one thing, so that you're not insane, something like that.
Yeah.
So it just allows me to have a place where I can do something meaningful, and become so good at it that I can do it so that it's better than if I you know, clean cars. I could do a better job. You know what I mean? Like, I can do better for society by doing that. It's the best I can do every day, is to become better at that stuff. And it's also, I think, a way to communicate. When you're communicating something in musical language, something very abstract, then you can say all these things that are too complicated that you can't say in your house when you're, you know, with your family or whatever. It's also that you create this space where you can give meaning to, where you can put logic and put things. You can put this cup here in music and that one over there. And it's like it's your perfect world. And I think it's maybe that's part of it. It's just insane people like me who find peace with doing something like that in order so they can actually seem normal to other people or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but also you can make stuff visible for everybody. I mean, you have a unique perspective, and I think it's really special how you can go places where words alone cannot go in music.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's.
I mean, poetry kind of can, because it also allows for, you know, the vibrations in between the words. Yeah. But I mean, music is just perfect for that. You can make stuff not visible, but tactile, and you can show stuff that is there in a way that nobody else can, kind of.
But
do you feel that your shyness has ever made touring and everything difficult? Like, did you have to learn to deal with that? Because I know on stage you're fine, basically.
Yeah,
right?
It's all that. It's all the other stuff that's hard for me. You know, like it's much more intense for me to check into a hotel than it is to go on stage and play. Like it does that sort of stuff is more takes more energy, I think, to do those kinds of things.
Yet you tour like a madman. I mean, still, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you tour a lot less now, but your touring always involves going to Copenhagen first, then going some other place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy the way you travel. Mm-hmm. You have this very, very isolated, small kind of islander life going on, and then you have like the craziest traveling salesman life.
The medicine man show.
I think that's really interesting that somebody, you know, who takes like you do.
Yeah, but I enjoy it so much. I think to play music and to make music, and it's necessary that I travel to make it. Like all of my work is outside of the Faroes, so I have to go to places. And I want to share it. I think wanting to share what you do is also sort of a primal thing that you have to have as an artist. You want to share it. You want to communicate it. If I was just doing it in my own room and not going out, it wouldn't be the same.
I think that's really interesting, because a lot of people think that, and of course that kind of plays into it, but a lot of people who don't perform kind of think that it's an ego thing, or a lot of people who are like kind of suspicious about the arts would think that it's like you want to show yourself. But I think the Americans kind of have it right with that need to shine, or they have the word glee that we don't, like in German, we don't have that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like the joy of performing, but also sharing at the same time. And I think that's really important that you just want to, it's basically about connection and sharing and being seen, but also allowing other people to feel seen.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's a really magical thing.
Yeah, right? I think that's a mixture of all those things. It's also selfishness, you know, wanting to be seen and to feel that what you're doing is good, acknowledgement and all. I think that's also part of it, for sure. Also just to... listen to this thing that I am hearing. Can you hear it too? You know, That thing is very pure and honest, I think. And I think most musicians that I know, they like that, you know, they that's what you, hey, look, I found this thing, guys, listen to this, you know, that, and that's, I think, an honorable thing to do, but it's definitely also to feel acknowledged and it's selfish. Yeah, it's, sure. It's just the small person that wants to go out and be seen. But yeah, but sure. I think once you are in music and once you understand music, once you feel it when you're in it, you just really like to be in it and you want people to see it and it's a natural thing to want to go out and share. Yeah. You can't keep beauty away. You know, you have to show it.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, one last thing that I thought was really interesting, and I'll think of all the other things once we've hung up and then we have to do it again sure. in like a year. But one important thing, because I think it's something that could be really inspiring for other people, is that I think you thrive off of change mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. and you're kind of driven by learning. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting thing, like mm-hmm. for people who want to do this a long time, mm-hmm. is kind of that you get new enthusiasm and new drive sure. from learning something new. And I've seen you, like you bought new equipment at Schneider's Laden when you were in Berlin,
right? So expensive.
And then you just spiraled into this like learning frenzy
yeah.
and a whole new record came out of that yeah. and then you do things like you did Juliet Letters mm-hmm. right, which is was more like a classical score mm-hmm. thing with a theme, with a subject mm-hmm. right, or Confessions with Nico Muhly
and yeah.
like maybe just talk about that aspect of doing new things.
Yeah, well, I think that there's that that's a wonderful sense of discovery when you do some new things. Like once you learn a new language, you can communicate with it. And I think if your motivation is to tell a story, then you can sort of use any sort of medium that you find. And in that process, in the beginning, you know, in the relationship, when you meet, when you fall in love, there is that magical thing that happens that goes away when after long marriage and all, but you know what I mean, like that mystery of when you just start something that has got a really powerful energy, and I think that when you are doing that you can create really strong things, because you become like that poker player. When you learn someone to play poker the first time, they usually win the first five games because okay. they go crazy and they think they can win and they gamble insanely. But when you know something really well, then you become more reserved and then of course you can become a poker master. But the beginner poker player takes crazy chances. But I think that's sort of a good energy if you're doing creative things. If I throw myself over something and I learn the language of it, then I can, if my motivation is to tell a story, to share something, then I can go through it. And then in that process, I discover things and things are magical. And oh, this is a kiss and this is a date, you know, and this is, you know, you see the whole future. All of these things pass when you're learning the great possibilities of, say, an instrument or something like that. I think it's a really good thing to do. And then you can move on with something else, and in that way you also acquire new skills. You know, you become better at seeing the bigger picture if you have spent a long time with something. If you're all about, say, rhythms, whatever. If you spend 4 years really getting into that, it's a great investment. Like you will learn loads, and you will make choices. Like it's good to have these kinds of things that you can't do, that you're trying to struggle with, and I enjoy that. I enjoy figuring things out, like gear or how stuff works, but I think it's part of the creative process. But I also feel like the most important thing of creativity, or when you write something, when you make something, it's the start. It's where the flower comes out, and it's where most things happen. Also, like when a kid is from 0 to 2 years old, like that's where really the world is yeah. doubled a million times. And you become, there's so much energy in that start there. And I think that that's a great tool when you create to sort of treat it as such a thing.
Or to create new beginnings.
Yeah.
Right? To like start something where you yourself can be new.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think. Like, I mean, I've just started doing my like autobiographical writing. Yeah. And it's just so much fun because I'm new at it and I'm figuring things out and you know, it's very complex, and then stuff plays off of each other in a way that was unexpected and it's really fun. And I'm sure it'll play back, you know, it'll like trigger some songwriting that'll be different from what I did before, you know, everything like feeds into everything, and that energy of doing new things is just great.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, I think I'll let you go because I'll show you my cards. Have I shown you my cards? Wait. This is how I prepared.
Oh,
do you
see that? That looks nice.
And I think I haven't really looked at them, but I think, I mean, let me look at them. I think we've talked about almost everything that I wanted to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. But I think still we'll have to do it again. Because you'll keep doing crazy new stuff that
we can talk about. We can always talk.
Yeah.
We can always talk.
What's next for you? Well, you're going home and staying home, or?
Well, no, I've got 5 drive-in shows now that I'm doing. And and then my booking agent also called this morning. He says that the gigs are just coming in now. So many gigs are coming in now because they're just opening up now in Denmark more.
Oh, okay.
So we're kind of thinking about maybe if I should get ready to have a summer in Denmark almost.
Okay.
Wow. I don't know. I'm going to talk to my wife about that, see if we, because she's finished working in about 2 weeks or so. So maybe we should come on down this way. Or I can do lots of shows, I think. But it's the summer of love. It's the anything can happen summer.
Yes.
So I think we're just going to wait and see. But I'm finishing some stuff. I'm putting out my guitar quartet's finally coming out now. That's the next thing.
Cool.
It's a guitar quartet. And then there's a small ensemble piece called Ringtones, about ringtones. Also, that's also something I think is really fun, to write ringtones. So I wrote.
Yeah, and you've also written, like, because people probably don't know, you've written music for jogging.
Yes, running music.
With a friend.
Yes, running music. So it's one of those obscure things that is coming out. And then I'm working on these recordings that I did in Argentina. I made some recordings in November. Was there for 2 weeks and recorded just a bunch of songs with Argentinian musicians that I met.
Great.
And so that I'm editing that now and getting that together. And I'm making lots of videos for that too. I started doing a lot of videos. That's also something I think is really fun. And then I got an iPad Pro, which is really a big mistake, because now I've started to draw a lot also. So I'll be, but it's just the same stuff as always. Just, different name.
Cool. Well, I hope we can visit each other soon-ish.
Yes.
Soon-ish.
Maybe we can come by to Berlin and say hi.
Yeah, that would be so cool. Yeah. And I've been thinking we need to come by for G Festival.
Oh, yes.
And then maybe like once everything's possible again, we should come take the kids to G Festival, and then maybe
that'd be so great.
Take you guys and go to Iceland.
Yes, that'd be so good.
You know?
Yeah.
That would be so
great. Great idea.
Well,
love that.
Well, we need our post-corona fantasies.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We do.
That's a great idea.
Well, I'm going to turn this off and then we can properly say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you secret things about my dog.
Oh, yes.
I'll just
But we haven't gotten around to that.
Yeah. So we're going to say bye-bye now. Okay. And talk about my dog in secret. Bye-bye.
So that was my chat with Taitua, one of my favorite people in the whole world. And if you shouldn't be acquainted with his work, you should go listen to it and actually buy it for money. He has a lot of records out and they're all great. If you want to have a closer look at what Taitua and I wrote together, you could check out my second solo album. It's called Ich bin das Chaos. And Taitua and me co-wrote 8 of those songs together, even though they are in German. So check that out. And also, I will put up a blog post on my Patreon about my time in the Faroes with him and about our friendship. And speaking of Patreon, if you aren't a patron yet, you might want to come over and check it out. It's www.patreon.com/Judith Holofernes, which is me. And it's amazing there. We have so much fun. And I take good care of my patrons. And yeah, I make extra episodes for them. It's a lot of fun. Come over if that's your cup of tea. Bye-bye.